1898, we're in the District 6 office of State Senator Mario Gallegos in Galena Park. We've gone over the areas I wanted to cover. You have a time crunch, so we'll start backwards and move quickly. I'm interested in the political career of Mario Gallegos. How did you get to this remarkable accomplishment of becoming a state senator for the Houston area in District 6?
Well, I'll go as quickly as I can. I think, when I graduated from high school, my mother, who was very active in my community, in the Barrio Magnolia here in Houston, I had good grades in high school. She picked for me, she wanted me to go to the Naval Academy. So she got with a local congressman here, at that time it was Bob Eckhart, and so I applied and all that. He sponsored me and they called me from the academy. I went through the motions. I went through the physical exam, everything, and passed everything except my SAT, which just was a slight tad below to go straight into the academy. But I got accepted to the prep school at Cambridge, the Annapolis prep school at Cambridge, Maryland. But I started thinking, this is my mother leading the way, you know, as she always does and always has. But I started thinking about it, so I got my file on the side of Dad. I've been reading this, the book from Annapolis. It says I got 6 years obligation. I don't know if I want to do that. I mean, I want to go to college, but I don't know if I want to do that. I said, well, son, you're going to have to do this. I said, are you going to tell your mother? I said, no, you know. I said, why don't you take me to the fire department and let me talk to the chief. I got good grades, good credentials, and I want to apply. So I applied for the fire department. I passed everything, flying colors. So, and then I had to go, give the breaking news to my mother. Well, obviously she said, pendejo, you know, but I went on through the fire department, and even the Naval Academy, I hadn't signed yet. They came to the fire department academy and the lieutenant commander, they come in and they took me out to the hallway. What happens? Well, I decided to go to the fire department. Well, they got mad at me and said, well, we'll get you in the draft, son. But little did they know, and I didn't know, when you join the police or fire department, you automatically get a deferment because you're in harm's way, whether you're police or fireman, you could get killed. So I got a deferment there. As I first started in the fire department, I didn't care nothing about politics. My parents were involved. They were in the community. I did not care anything.
What year was this?
This was in the late 60s. My mother, really earlier than that, I'm talking about maybe 64 on, my mother would, our den, the front house of our den, all the furniture would go out, and here comes the tables and chairs and phones and phone books and lists. She would run the mayor's campaign out of our front, the Hispanic Chicano campaign out of our front room, you know. I didn't care. I was still in high school then. That's where the politics got. My father was real active in the American Legion, Little League, Civic Club, all the rest of them, you know, PTA. So was my mother. There were...
Can I get some water?
No, that's all right. They were the politicians, you know. I didn't like politics. I thought all politicians were crooks and all that. At an early age, that's the way I felt. So, as time went on, and I never got involved in my union until I was 28. So I decided, well, let me get involved and all that. What happened is I got involved with my union. My dad had 21 years in the fire department before me. There was an opening for fire chief in Brownsville. He applied and got accepted. So they moved to the Valley. They moved to Brownsville. And I stayed here because I just joined the fire department, so I was just a kid at 18. So back home about 70, and I started helping my union. I lobbied for them over in Austin, you know, with our benefit. That's where we get all our civil service, everything, rights, everything. That's where I got a little taste of it. But still didn't want to make that plunge. Well, like in 76, it was a mayor's election here. My parents were still in Brownsville. There was a fire chief, it was a district chief, that called me and said, hey, look, you think your mother would come back and help this guy, you know, in his mayor? Because he knew the mom was real active back then. So he said, I don't know, but they're coming in for Thanksgiving. You can call them. So they met together, my dad and him. They were old friends. And dad came out of the meeting. You know, I was outside. I never was in the meeting. So he came out and said, son, I'm going to send mom home, and she's going to help the guy in his campaign. McCann, it was Jim McCann. Well, McCann got elected. And so dad told me, hey, look, the fire chief, well, the now fire chief, that district chief now got named fire chief. Well, he promised my father an outreach center for Hispanics, for recruitment of Hispanics. So dad called me from Brownsville, and he said, hey, look, has he done anything? No, he hadn't done it. Well, set a meeting up with him. I said, okay. So I called his office and he says, look, can I meet with the chief? And the girl tells me, well, Mario, he's booked up all that. This was in January. So he's booked up till April, so he cannot be equal. So I, you know, and that was part of the deal. My mother would come, help McCann, got him elected, all this, in return for an outreach center for us. Well, nada. So what I did, I was so infuriated and so upset that I just camped out at the guy's office, you know. Finally, he saw me and said, well, we ain't got enough money, Mario. We don't have this. And I said, okay. So that's where it snapped, okay? And I just, you know, it was more at that time revenge. I'm not a revengeful guy, you know. And I think history will show that outside. But here, this guy had asked for my mother's help and all that. And the deal was for an outreach center for Hispanics, and no deal, no dice. So I got involved. See, I was never involved. My mother was involved in that part, not me. Anyway, I got involved. We had redistricting here. It looked like, and they had carved out a district for a Hispanic. You know, we never had a Hispanic on city council. So I went with hat in hand, humble, and went to meet Ben Reyes. You know, and before, my parents were vigorously opposed to him. You know, I mean, we would always help Richard Holguin, who always ran for Magnolia. And ran against somebody from Denver Heart. Well, this was, well, you know, he knew that we were always in opposition. My parents were always opposed to his candidacy.
I thought your mom was his legislative assistant.
Well, this was later.
Ah, okay.
This was later. I'm talking about
early.
I'm talking about in early 70s.
74?
Oh, no, it was 72.
Okay.
72. Anyway, so I went hat in hand. I said, look, I know my parents had opposed me before, but I'm here to tell you I want to help you. You know, I want to help you get elected, and I mean, it took about 2 weeks for me to gain his confidence and that I was trustworthy, and I did, and I worked my ass off for him. You know, he got elected, landslide.
What did you do?
I block walked, signs. You know, did everything he asked me to do. I even took off my own time, which money, and my wife is still mad at me to this day. I took off my own time. Block walk, did signs. I mean, all what a soldier does in a campaign, you know. And one of the grunts, you know. Anyway, on election eve, when the tallies came in, and he told me, Mario, you know, first of all, he thanked me. He said, man, what can I do for you? And I had told him this story about my father and mother, and he says, so the next day, the mayor that we had helped gets thrown in a runoff. So he's calling for Ben. So Ben calls me and says, hey, we're going to go meet. And Ben took about four or five other people with him. And we met at the hotel over on Pierce Elevated in Main. It's called 2016 Main, up in about the 15th floor. So we went around the room. We went in there. There he was. We went around. Ben had everybody go around the world. We talked about trash pickup, service, streets, potholes, you know, the regular police, all of it. So he says, Ben, is there anything else? He says, yeah, Mayor, there's one more. Can I cuss on this thing?
Sure, it's unedited. So.
Okay, he says to me, no, he says to the mayor, he said, it's that fucking fire chief of yours, you know? He promised us an outreach center 2 years ago, and he did not deliver. The mayor picked up the phone right there. He said, get the chief on the phone. He said, did you promise? He said, well, how come you haven't done it, you know? Well, I want an outreach center open tomorrow. And hang up the phone. And that was my introduction to hardcore politics, okay? No, I didn't like it, you know, but I mean, I wanted to see, you know, show that I could prove my point, too. Like I said, I'm not a revengeful man. So from then on out, I mean, I had an adversary there, you know, with the fire chief. And he punished me. He punished me, like kind of like your situation. He punished me. I was on a list for district chief. There was enough positions made. You know, I had come like I came out three on a promotional list. They were due to make 10. He killed the whole list to get to me. I know you know the feeling. And so, outside of that, what went inside of me. Then on the union, there was a bill in 83 that was introduced. I forgot by who. I think Al Edwards introduced the bill that would allow appointments of your high command in both police and fire. And I studied the bill and I said, you know what? We, at that time, neither in police or fire did we have a Hispanic, you know, or black. So I said, I like this bill. Well, my union president came to me and he said, ¿sabes qué? I need you to go to Austin and lobby against this bill. I said, wait a minute. I like it. You know, I told him I like it. Well, I got blackballed by my union. You know, so I mean, it was a split. My union went to as far as go to Washington, to the international, and get me exiled. I forgot what the union term is, but they tried to get me completely thrown out of my union. You know, well, anyway, to make a long story short.
So were you acting on that belief? Were you trying to lobby for it?
No, you said
you liked it.
No, I told him I like the bill, and I'm going to lobby for it, whether I get your help or not. Well, I got banned from the union.
Got it.
Okay.
Hello?
Okay. I got banned from the union. They brought all the Washington people, the area vice president, Buddy Moss, a good friend of mine now. They had him come in to referee the big fight. And I organized the Hispanic firefighters back then, you know, and pleaded my case to them. And most of them were afraid. Back then, you know, we didn't have, you know, that poder, and I just was a little bit before my time. Well, in 85, we compromised and we got the bill passed. So now that's why you have, you know, Lalo Torres and Joe Reyes, and we got Hispanics. You had Art Contreras but now we have blacks and Hispanics and females at the high command of both police and fire departments. So I got more of the taste of politics, you know. So in 1987, we found out that my father had cancer. So, you know, we started, you know, we got all the family together. Well, you know, mother's going to have to do so, you know, we don't know. They didn't tell us how long he had. So what we did is we all got together, you know, because we've seen in the Hispanic community when one of the spouses dies, all they do, one or the other, whether it's male or female, they just lay around on the couch and they wither away. But we didn't want that to happen to my mother. So I talked to Ben and Roman Martinez at that time, the state rep. And there was an opening. They had carved out an opening that a Hispanic could win at HISD, you know. So they came, and they came to me before we thought about mother. They came and said, "Marty, we think your mother can win the seat. We think she can win the seat." So they came to the house. They talked to mother. I talked to dad. You know, I said, "We need a runner." Well, she ran. She ran against five of the opponents. She won 75% of the vote. And it's to this day. And in fact, today, I'm glad you're doing this interview today. I'm happy to announce it. I'm proud today. My mother got sworn in as president of HISD school board, you know. And there hadn't been a president, a Hispanic president, for 10 years. See, so mother is now the president of HISD board. And then after that, but we wanted her to keep her busy in case dad, you know, we didn't know when my father was going to die. So we kept busy, and then Al Luna, who's a state rep from this district, made a surprise announcement that he wasn't going to run. My dad was still alive, and I asked the dad, "What do you think?" "I think we can win it." You know, I said, "I think we can win it." By that time, I had already been hit by the political bug, and so we ran, and we won. And I dedicated the election to my father.
You didn't check with Ben or Lynn?
No. I checked with Ben. At that time, I checked with Ben. Now, this is where we were still on the same side. We had broken from Al, because Al wasn't with me at that time. You know, that was that big split over the constable's race between Castillo and Victor Treviño. And we split. Ben Reyes and Al Luna, they split back on that race, on the constable's race. I think it was in 88 or 89. There was a big split there. But I decided to run. I talked to Ben. He gave me his blessing. So we ran and we won. So
how did you do that? How much money did you raise in volunteers?
Well, I was born and raised in Magnolia. You know, and in fact, most of the people there in my neighborhood of the Barrio of Magnolia, they don't know me as Mario Gallegos. They know me as Bobo. See? And that was my nickname all through my childhood.
B-O-B-O?
B-O-B-O. So, I went to Austin. Roman, you know, helped me. He paraded me around the lobbyists, and I told him I'm going to win, you know. I might get in a runoff, but I'm going to win this race, you know. So they got behind me. I raised a little money. I think I spent about, my first campaign I spent, I want to say about $30,000.
How many opponents?
We had four opponents. I got thrown in a runoff with Mike Yarbrough, who's now a councilman here, a black guy here, African-American that's here from Houston. But I won the runoff, you know, like 70-30. It was overwhelming. And then a few years later.
How old were you then?
I was 40. I was 40.
Why don't you give me the birthday so I can decipher all the other years that you've mentioned?
Well, I was born 9/8/50.
Okay.
And my first two terms are in the House, and there was, we were still politically, you know, we're still, you know, I was still aligned with Leonel and Ben and John Castillo and Roman. Well, and I remember the date vividly. It was in 93. Laney, we had a speaker's fight that time, and Laney and Rudd. I was for Rudd, and Laney won. And Laney had called me. It was funny. They had found me. You know, they had found me. They were looking around. You know, they had found me, and it was Pete Gallego, a good friend of mine from Alpine, state rep. He had found me. Said, "Mario, we have the vote." You know, he's telling me Laney had the votes, and I believed him. You know, because Pete and I are close. So I said, "Look, is Laney there with you?" He says, "Yeah." I said, "Put him on the phone." I said, "Mr. Speaker, congratulations." You know, and I told him, but, you know, and Pete asked me to come across. I said, "Look, I gave my commitment to Rudd. If I change now, you know, I have no, you know, I lose all my credibility and loyalty and all that. I can't. But I'll tell you what. If Rudd releases me in the morning, you know, when obviously he's going to find out that you have the votes, and then, you know, I'm with you, you know, and I'll be loyal to you as I was going to be for Rudd, you know. So we'll see in the morning." So in the morning, Rudd released us. He said he's got the votes. So we went over to Laney, and we pledged to Laney, you know. So he had the vote. I mean, it was unanimous by that time. Well, Laney called me later. He called me later. He called me in later. And he says, "Mario, I just want to tell you that I appreciate what you told me. Because all them other weak guys came over real fast. You stayed loyal. And I would trust you before I trust any of them others." And he named me to the Appropriations Committee.
Wow.
He named me to the Appropriations Committee. So, I mean, you tell the truth and you stay with your convictions. And you don't always lose. He put me on the Appropriations Committee.
Did you ask for that?
I asked for it. I didn't think I was going to get it because I was on the other side.
Sure.
But he knew that I'd be loyal to him, like I was to Rudd, you know. So, anyway, that year, 93, that 93 session, and I remember the date. It was April 5th, 1993. We were in session. Roman had come in. Roman Martinez had come in. And the reason he came in is Deanna Davila, who had taken his seat. You know, he ran against Whitmire and lost the prior year. Well, Deanna ran for his seat and she won. Well, no, she won another seat that we carved out over here, and Deanna won. And Deanna and him were dating. Well, he came in that early that morning, and as a former member, he gets to go on the House floor. And he said, "Mario, I need some help." I said, "What is it?" "It's Deanna's birthday. I forgot all. I need it. Can you do me a proclamation? Can you set up something for lunch where we can?" I said, "Sure." I mean, they were my best friends. Okay, we were friends. And so I did her a quick proclamation, you know, acknowledged her birthday, and then had somebody prepare something for a quick lunch. You know, at that time, Laney would let us off for lunch. So we went to lunch. Everybody, I mean, with big old love pal. Okay, everybody happy. Deanna's birthday and all. Well, anyway, about 2 o'clock that afternoon, I get a phone call that the federal judge had overturned the lines, the district lines of the Senate district in Houston. So we now have a Hispanic Senate district. So it's for the next cycle, for the next election. So I called my mom and I called my wife and all, you know, I called all my, you know, and I called some of the key players with me. And I had put a phone call into Ben, you know. So, and about a few minutes later, after I made my calls, well, Roman calls me. You know, he says he's over at Deanna's office. Can I come over there? They want to talk. I said, okay. You know, I didn't think nothing of it at that time. Well, I went in there and he said, well, you know, the federal courts just overturned the lines a while ago. I said, yeah, I'd heard that. He says, well, you know that seat belongs to me. You know, this is Roman talking. And I said, oh, yeah? Well, I thought it belongs to the citizens of Senate 6, you know? And he said, oh, Mario, you know, I'm going to run, and Deanna's going to help me. And Ben, I just got through off the phone with Ben, and he's going to help me. And I said, Roman, I thought you wanted to run for city council. At that time, there was another seat. And I had already committed to Roman for the other seat, the one that Felix Fraga is in right now. I said, I thought you were going to run for city council. I already committed to you for you know, that I would help you raise money. And well, no, it's all, forget all that, you know. Forget all that. We're going to run, you know, this is us. I said, look, I had already told Ben, you know, since we were supporting you for council for the north side, that if anything happened on this court case, that I wanted to run for the seat, you know. And he said, well, he's supporting me, Marty. I said, well, I tell you what, Roman, I'm gonna run for the seat too. And then, you know, it went downhill from there as far as, I said, look, and I left the room, I said, look, I got two good friends in here. And Deanna was saying, look, Roman's gonna win, he's got a high name idea. And I said, and I told Deanna, I said, you know what, Deanna? I said, I like your district better than I do my own, because I have more alumni from Milby High School that live in your district than live in mine, you know? And I said, I bet you I win. I said, it might take me two times. I might have to go to one, but what? Read my lips. I told him, I'll be the winner. Anyway, I walked out of there, and then that's when I split with the Castillo-Reyes regime.
You didn't try to get Ben to mediate or negotiate?
No, let me, okay. There was a time, true story. This is a true story. I mean, I had people coming in here, because I was still the sitting state rep. You know, well, let me go back to right after Roman and Deanna. I left there. We went into session next day. Everybody knows it's a new Senate district, okay? Well, Roman's in the lobby, lobbying. He can lobby. I can't because of ethics, okay? He's out in the room. He's gonna run all that, you know. And so I get a call. I said, hey, Roman's out there lobbying the whole lobby. You know, taking names. You know. So I said, okay. So I walked outside, true story. I walked outside and I looked up in the air. I looked up in the air and I hollered. I said, if anybody is listening, this is an announcement. As soon as this session is over, and I was looking up, I wasn't looking at any face, I was looking straight up, that I will be a candidate for Senate District 6. If anybody's listening out there, you know, I never talked to anybody. And I said, if anybody's listening out there, I am going to be a candidate for Senate District 6. Now, if anybody's listening, I am now going to walk back in on that House floor and vote on issues, if anybody's listening, that are important to, if anybody's listening. And I walked back in. True story. I didn't lobby anybody, didn't mention anybody by name, so I broke no rules, you know, even though Roman, you know, kind of called in on me. Well, that's where, you know, we broke, all the ties broke. There was, okay, I had a bunch of people come in here and try to get me out of the race. They said, he's going to beat you. He's got a high name ID. He's going to have the money. You know, get out of the race, you know. I must have had a dozen people sitting where you are right now ask me, plead with me to get out of the race. The final, there was one last attempt. I get a phone call from Prudential, and who I respect, you know, and he's with Roman, you know. He says, Mario, why don't we sit down, you know.
Those two had not broken by then?
No, they were back together.
They got back together.
So, and I said, Freeman, what? Well, he had said, well, look, let's meet over in my law office. And I said, who's going to be? He said, well, it's going to be, you know. Oh, man, they had about 14 people, all Roman's people, and just me. I said, hey, look, man, do I think, I was born at night, but not last night. Anyway, hello? So I said, okay, Prudential, I agree, I'll come, you know. Even though my mother counseled me, and I had a bunch of consultants. But ultimately, at that time, my father had died right after I dedicated the election to him. He died about 2 months later. But now I was taking counsel from my mother. Who better, you know, a consigliere than her, you know? I mean, who really knew the business backwards and forwards. And she counseled me against it. I said, Mom, you know, let's go. You know, they'll be saying out there that that Mario's just arrogant, hard-headed. You know, he don't want to see the big picture and all that. No, let's go. I know him. Hell, I mean, they were my mentors. So I called Freeman back. I said, Freeman, we'll go. But here's who I want in the room. I want Ben, you, Janie, and John Castillo at that time. Okay? That was four. And I said, well, Freeman said, who are you bringing? I said, well, I'm bringing my mother, me, and the American Legion commander at that time. His name was Manuel Gaitan from Magnolia. Anyway, so we go over there. Ben ain't there, but the others are there. And mother asks, where's Ben? He's coming. So we go back and forth, you know. We just go back and forth. And, you know, Mario, you know, I mean, this could be so easy, you know. You need to get out of the race, man. You're on appropriations. You know, we got to have a voice there. And, you know, they gave me all the reasons that I should get out of the race, you know, because I had helped my community on appropriations and all this. And I said, look, you know, Roman's got ID. He's going to have the money. We're helping him. The leadership is behind Roman Martinez, you know. So I said, look, I trust the folks out there, you know. That's who I'm counting on, the folks out there, you know. And we went back and forth about an hour and a half. Mother never said anything, neither did the American Legion guy. Finally, you know, after back and forth with Fruma and Janie and John, Ben never showed. Then they asked the American Legion command. He told him, look, you know, this is a homeboy. You know, he was born and raised in Magnolia. We're going with him. We're going to stay with him. We're going to go all the way. Win or lose, you know, the commander. So finally, Mother speaks. And she wants to know where Ben Reyes is, you know. And then they said, well, I mean, he said he's going to be here. I said, you know what, Ben? And then this is a true story. True story. And she says it in Spanish. She says, you know why Ben is not here? Porque no tienen los pantalones a verme en mis ojos, en mis ojos, y decirme que no va a apoyar a mi hijo. And then she goes, this meeting is over. Let's go, you know, and then we're going to kick your ass. True story. And we did. It took us two times, but let me tell you, I mean, that was one of the most...
Well, that campaign was very illustrative. It's almost like a casebook study. How did you beat him? I know the stories, but I want you to repeat them. The issues and the opportunities you grabbed to win.
Well, let me tell you. I mean, it was a tough campaign, very vicious. I mean, signs being knocked down. You get the picture. And I spent about $500,000, and you know, the lobby, since I was a sitting rep, you know, I was able to convince the lobby, I'm going to beat him, You know, he's got high name ID, sure, you know, but I think after I get the other people out of the race, I'll be able to beat him. Well, I mean, it was a long, hard, he had the leadership. He had the leadership behind him, but I had, you know, the firefighters that came in behind me, the police, and I had some other groups. I mean, it was a bitter fight over at AFL-CIO. They did not endorse. And then it was strictly block walking, my family, my friends, my, you know, people that I graduated from, LB alumni, you know. The first go around, you know, Yolanda Flores was in the race, también, and another Anglo, McCullough. And in the first round, let me tell you, the first round, it was a very cold night, you know. Ramon had gotten 38% of the vote. And I came in second at 26, Yolanda at 20, and then the other guy got the rest, you know. So, I mean, here he's 12 points, percentage points away from a victory. You know, that's not very, that's not a very consolation prize for me, you know. I mean, we worked our ass off, I felt. You know, my family worked their ass off, you know, and so did my friends and all my supporters, and we only get 26%. So like we kind of regroup, and I just felt down in the dumps, you know. But we regrouped and said, hey, we can do this thing. I felt it in here, and I said, we can do this thing, you know. So we just regrouped and said, and we looked at the map and said, let's go where he beat us. You know, we know we're going to win Galena Park. I said, and Magnolia, I said, let's go over there where he beat us. You know, so we blocked, walked everything out there. I mean, you know, just, you know, everywhere, north side, his backyard, everywhere. And, but we got some help. And, you know, those consultants that you pay and all that, you know. Well, what had happened is Yolanda had lost. So she had endorsed my candidacy. So what happened was, is I got a phone call from one of her supporters and one of her campaign managers, by the way. He said, Mario, you know, we did background research on you and Roman and the other people, you know. I said, but you know what? I think there's something missing here. So the guy goes and does some more research. He called me back in 4 hours. He tells me, Mario, you're not going to believe this. I said, what? No, well, I'm going to tell you on the phone. I'll go back and I'll beat you at y'all. He had brought in two county affidavits filed at the county courthouse. They were IRS liens. So they're the total amount of well over $100,000 in IRS taxes that Ramon had not paid. And I said, how come I didn't know this, you know? You know, the man is 4 years behind in paying his taxes, you know, and I'm paying my consultants over here, and they don't, I got to hear it from some guy over here, you know? So I want to make sure it was, you know, I'm not going to do that, you know, unless it's legit. You know, I said, I want to make sure it's legit. Went over there, and nope, it's legit. It's confirmed. They put the stamp, and said, he has not paid. So I had my consultants, and then they, you know, well, who are we going to give this to, you know? So, well, who's been treating us now? At that time, it was a Post and the Chronicle. And I said, and so I put a statement. I said, look, my opponent wants to run for the state senate where he's going to, he has the authority to oversee taxes, sales tax, and all that. When he don't pay his own, to the tune of over $100,000, you know, so they approached him, you know. It was front page the next day that he had not paid 4 years of back taxes. You know, so I want to say that maybe it was a gift from heaven, you know, but we still did the work.
Get him on the automobile and child support?
Well, we got him on the automobile, not on child support. We got him. No, here's what happened. I said, well, look, no, on hot checks. He was writing all these hot checks. He wrote one to the U.S. Postal Service. Anyway, we had found out that he hadn't paid his school taxes, you know? And the Chronicle guy had called him, look, have you paid, you know, your school? Yeah, you know, I'm okay on that, you know, so. Well, the Chronicle guy, on a hunch, went to the tax office, and guess who walks in? to pay his taxes. And he catches him. He says, what are you paying it? So he had not paid, and that made the news. So we had, you know, so, I mean, we had some help in that. And I put it on TV. But I think election night, runoff night, you know, as, you know, we went back to, you know, I went to my headquarters, he went to his. The first result, I mean, he had beat me because he had the leadership, still leadership behind him. He had beat me in the primary, he had beat me by 5,000 votes on the early vote. I mean, that's a big amount. But this time, he had only beat me by, he had me by 500 votes on the early vote. So I said, I knew he had worked hard, and so had we. So then that was the first, that was the early vote. So when 5% came out, he still had me like 57-43 with, but it had come down, 350 vote difference. 15% came, it was 56-44, and it was like a 200 vote difference. In other words, I was gaining. And then when the 30% vote came in, a complete flip-flop. You know, I had him by 1,200 votes, I think. And it was 56-44. And then when 50% of the vote came in, it got bigger. It got bigger. It like, I was at 57 and he was at 43, and we had like a 2,500 vote difference. And then, and I'm over here wondering, where in the hell are these votes coming from, you know? I want to know, that is Galena Park in? Is Magnolia in? Is his backyard in? You know, I want to know. Well, I checked the other races, and there was runoffs in the other, in the state rep race. Jessica Farrar was running against a guy from Roman's backyard. Well, the guy had been behind all night, but when a certain box, he caught up. It was 1,000 votes. Well, it was his box, and that was Roman's box. So that means his box, 218, Lindell, had come in. So it had come in, and I still gained. So finally I got a phone call from Election Central, you know, and the guy says, Mario, you got 50%, you're up at about 2,500 votes, and let me tell you, he said, the barrio of Magnolia and Galena Park ain't even in yet. Man, I went like that. I said, this ball game is over, you know. Because I won 80% out here and 80% in Magnolia, so I mean, you know, that's, and I mean, it was one of the most remarkable comebacks that I know of in Chicano politics. I don't know about the, you know, maybe there's stories like that in South Texas, but in the high profile state senate, I mean, you know, seat. I mean, I just you know, I would. I was just overcome. I would like to think that my father helped me, even though he was dead. He was there beside me. But it was a humbling night, I don't mind telling you.
Let me ask some quick questions. I know you're in a time crunch. How is the work in the Senate different than the work in the House? How do you go about your business?
Well, in the House, you got 150 members over there. You know, it's hard. There's so many committees, it's hard to run, you know, unless the bill is it's not confrontational, you know, that it's an agreed to bill. I mean, you got to run through there, you got to run through the committee first, and then calendars, and then all this stuff, you know, and it bogs it down, you know, and you can get bogged down by so many bills, and it's just, and you got to go through so many faces, you know, and jump through a lot of hoops over in the House. In the Senate, it's not like that. The Senate, you only got 31 players. And you get it through your committee. I mean, obviously, you know, if you got an issue that somebody doesn't like and all that, you'll know it, and you try to work it out with the person, you know. I mean, straight one-on-one, you know. You can just walk, you know, he's either sitting behind you. You know, there's only 31. I mean, it's more of a personal. Now, you can't hide in the Senate.
Like a classroom.
It's like a classroom. You can't hide in the Senate. You can hide over in the House. You know, there's 150.
It's like an auditorium.
It's an auditorium. So, it's just the as far as for passing a bill, it's more streamlined over there. You pass your bill in committee. You run it. The lieutenant governor, you know, can either put it on the agenda or not. Now, you got to have 21 votes to come up now. and or 11 to kill. Either one. You got 11 to stop a bill, or 21 to at least, you know, have it heard on the bill. And they usually go around. I mean, you go around and says, look, here it is. You got your 21. You tell the lieutenant governor you got your 21. Follow, you know, you're there. Over in the House, you got to put it in on calendars, and it's at the whim of the calendars committee before you go on.
Is it easier to raise money as a senator than as a House?
Oh yeah, no. A Senate seat is five times as large as I represent almost 600,000 people. A state rep is about 110, 120.
The magic number of 11 to kill, it also is the same number of members of the Hispanic caucus. Mm-hmm. How effective is the caucus, and what role do the non-Hispanic members play?
Well, I think you have 11 members that, under the present Senate rules, can stop any bill, you know, whatever. The non Hispanic members are Moncrief and the two African Americans, Ellis and Royce West. They're allies. I mean, we use each other.
Well, and Shapley from El Paso.
And Shapley, because he's got a majority Hispanic constituency.
Is that the rule, that they got to have a majority Hispanic?
Well, it was the rule before, but because we had friendlies that were allies to us, like Moncrief, like Ellis, and basically we have the same agenda as far as issues, you know, because of our socioeconomic districts, you know, and. So we went ahead as a body. The Hispanic Senate Caucus gave the okay to go ahead and let people like Moncrief and Shapley and the two African Americans in. And now we have 11 that on 99% of the issues are always together. So it's a force to be reckoned with. If you have 11 under present Senate rules, you can kill anything that comes up.
Do the seven Hispanic members, Mexican Americans, do you all meet, have breakfast, have lunch, talk?
Yes, we do. We have a caucus. I'm the treasurer. Greg Luna presently is the chair. Frank Madla is the vice chair. I'm the treasurer. We meet on a regular basis there now during the interim. We hardly ever meet other than by phone. There's only seven of us, so we can do a conference call. But during the session. While we're in session, we meet on a weekly basis. We meet on a weekly basis, issues, whether it be education, higher ed, vouchers, affirmative action, law school at Texas, and you know, those kind of issues. Well, we meet on them. We try to formulate a plan of attack. How are we going to do this on the floor, or if there's a bill over there that the Republicans are that they're hovering over, that they want this bill passed, can we compromise that for affirmative action or vouchers? Like, here's what I did on vouchers. I got 13 to commit. Vouchers never came up. That was a Bivens bill. You know, I got my 13 to commit, and I went to the media, said, I got 13, I can block. You know, Bivens was showing the 13, you know. So then that's how you do. But you know, you can, over there, you can trade off, you know.
To your knowledge, have the seven members, Mexican Americans, hung together on one issue and said, this is what we're going to run, regardless of the speaker's agenda, I mean, lieutenant governor's agenda, or governor's agenda, or anybody. This is a Chicano issue, and we're going to go with it?
Yes, we did it on affirmative action. We did, there was some others, and I want to say, on the South Texas lawsuit, my mind goes blank on that. But issues like that, dealing strictly with the Hispanic community and African American, we usually have the same hot button issues.
Well, this is different though, your answer here, because unlike in the House, the Hispanic caucus seldom acts together.
Well, and that's true, and because you have some that have other agendas. Whether they want to, they are. I mean, they got to answer to the speaker. You know, a lot of them are chairman. You know, like for instance, an example, that last tax vote. You know, you had 75 regressive taxes in there, but the speaker wanted the bill. He wanted the bill. So chairman, the chair people that are Hispanic had to go for the speaker. He named them chair. So I mean, they're locked in. I don't mind telling you, I went against Bullock, you know, and I said, look, it don't take a fourth grader with a big chief tablet and a number two pencil to understand 75 regressive taxes. Now, had I voted for those 75 regressive taxes, I would have had an opponent. I would have had an opponent here in Senate 6. Those 75 would have ate my people here in Senate 6 and the other Hispanic districts I'm in. Oh, our people can't afford those types of sales taxes, you know? And I went against Bullock. I said, hey, I'm sorry, I'm a solid no. I said, if I vote for that thing, I might as well give you my resignation right now. You know, I ain't voting for that. And that's the way those other guys should know. Now, we have another one that voted with the tax bill. He's got an opponent. He's probably going to lose. You know, issues like that, that's why you have that and over here. I'm not incumbent upon the lieutenant governor.
How frustrating is it to have a predetermined agenda before you get there? This is such a complex system now that most of the work for the next session in 99, it's already laid out. You're pretty much railroaded in a direction. How do you cope with that?
Well, you try to, you know, I've studied it and monitored it. The interim committees that meet, they usually have a set agenda, you know, for education, health and human services, state affairs, all those, whatever the issue is. If I've got an issue dealing with education, I'm against vouchers. And, you know, the interim committee all of a sudden has a formulated plan, you know. It's hard to do because the chairman controls, the chairman and the lieutenant governor control the agenda, you know, along with the recommendations from the legislative budget board, which I'm not on, and the LBB, and then any auditors that the state auditors that might have given some kind of recommendations. But it's frustrating when you go in. And you already got a set agenda on education and all that. Wait a minute, where's my input? You know, well, they got to, you don't have committee hearings, you know. But that, you know, they try to get as many senators to sign on the bill as is, like they did on judicial selection. I wasn't on that. I wasn't there then. They had gone, Bullock had selected a committee, you know, hey, this is what we want, all this. Ellis was on there, and that's where I said, look, under this plan, you cannot elect, it was by Harris County, I said, you cannot elect a Hispanic in Harris County to that judicial bench. We got beat here. We got beat here. So I'm not for that plan, you know, and I killed it. I basically killed it. And they didn't, my folks here didn't have a Hispanic voice before. I'm the first Hispanic from Harris County to sit in the Texas Senate. And we killed that thing. That wasn't gonna elect Hispanics here, you know, so. But it is frustrating at times on that.
Why do you do what you do?
Let me tell you, I do it by impulse. You know, I live every day at a time, even the legislation that I do. I mean, surely some people come to me for legislation. For instance, this road and bridge issue, I don't know if you knew that I took on. The county collects every time you go, every year, you get a deal from TxDOT, you know, that you got to pay, renew your license, your license tag. Well, you, what a lot of people didn't know is you pay $10.50 in there for road and bridge. Well, I did some research, my staff and others, and the majority of the vehicle owners live inside the city, but also we're paying that $10.50. Well, we found out, did the research, that the majority of the money that went into that kitty, which was to the tune over 10 years, $100 million over 10 years, the majority of that money, only Houston got 5% of the $100 million, and we are paying the bulk of that $10.50 that you pay and I pay. I think you pay it now. Anyway, I went ballistic. I even went and protested. You know how what protest means. I went to Harris County and I took my sticker and I said, what? And I asked, what is this for? It's a road and bridge. And media was there. I am protesting this $10.50 that my constituents pay for and not getting the services for. You know, that was strictly by impulse, you know. I felt that my folks, my little old lady in Denver Harbor and Magnolia, have to pay this $10.50, and their streets don't get fixed. Out of that $100 million over 10 years are going out to the Woodlands and Kingwood and all that. That's bullshit, you know. That's the way I think that I have operated, you know, strictly by impulse. If I see this something's wrong, and my folks are getting treated unjustly for the taxes that they pay, then I'm gonna say something about it, and I have. I have said it on that Senate floor.
Perhaps I misstated the wording of the question, because mm-hmm. I certainly don't want to leave this impression for the archive. Let me ask it another way.
What are the future plans of Mario Gallegos? You must have some short-term and long-term goals here.
You know, I thought about Congress, you know. I didn't know about the Senate. You know, hell, I was in a fire station, for Christ's sake, you know. I mean, I would have never in my wildest dreams, sitting in a fire station, fighting fires for a living, and now here in a state Senate seat, you know. I mean, I go day to day. You know, my family has a lot to do with it, and my friends. What holds in the future for Mario? I don't know. You know, I would hope to think that history, as far as it relates to me, the book, and I've done a lot for my district, and that's probably why I didn't get an opponent. You know, that is in Houston Hispanic community, that has never been done. A Hispanic go on, other than my mother, who goes unopposed but I'm talking about for a House seat, a state House seat, a council seat, a state Senate seat. Más triste, you know. I'm telling you, that's the first time that I've never heard of nobody getting an opponent, you know, this time. But Congress. If the numbers are right, you never know. Maybe mayor down the road. I like I said, I'm by impulse. I go day to day. You know, this phone rings off the wall. This job is a 24-hour job. It's not like a Republican seat where those lawyers, they could care less. You know, unless they get a phone call, you know, now and then. You know, and they have staff. You know, when I get a phone call here, they don't want to talk to my staff. They want to talk to Bobo and Mario. You know. What the future is, whether it be Congress or a mayor, you know, I just don't know. And I, like I said, I play it day for day. But I tell you what, if the vibes are there and the feeling is right, just like I did, you know, I had that look in my eye and that fire, you know, that fire inside here. You know, and I think that I can win that seat just like I did the Senate seat and I won. I mean, I'll run for Congress.
Let me ask you some really bullet questions quickly. Who is the most effective political leader in the Mexican community today?
You know, I'd have to go national to tell you, okay? And that I would have to say Bill Richardson, you know. I think he is. I would tell you that it's Henry Cisneros, you know, and Henry was before, I mean, you know, what went on, and Henry still is one of my heroes. You know, I don't care what's happened, you know, that man could have been president of the United States.
Anybody else?
Bill Richardson, I think you have to look at the lady in L.A.
Gloria Molina?
Gloria Molina. I think you got to look at her. And plus the, now the House Speaker there in California.
Well, there's a new one because of term limits.
There's a new one.
Okay.
But, I mean, those are just, I mean, from outside looking, I really don't know, I mean, if they, you know, how they came up. Henry, I know. Okay. Bill Richardson, I know. I mean, strictly leadership, you know, and then have an impact on our community.
Most effective Mexican-American organization?
I would have to say probably NALEO, you know, since all the Hispanic elected officials belong to them. NALEO and then Southwest Voter real close behind.
Okay.
You know.
Most pressing issues facing the Mexican-American community today?
I think education. I think education, because there's an education and affirmative action. I have to put those together, and then they go together, you know, because of Hopwood, you know. And I think you're going to have an assault now that Hispanics are becoming the majority in Texas. That there's going to be assault on education, and it's a Trojan horse called vouchers. That are going to try to take money away from the public educational system, away from my folks, you know, and I see that, and affirmative action is real close as far as our entrepreneurs in the Hispanic community, where they want to, you know, a place at the table where they can, you know, bid for contracts and stuff. And I think those are the two Those two plus economic development, you know, a close second, and jobs. There's a lot of issues. Immigration is another one. I mean, you know, it's just, we are, I mean, as what you thought we had back in the 60s is slowly, you know, we're losing the public relations war on affirmative action and you know, Hopwood and those issues like that have come, you know, and I fear that, you know, we're on the defensive, you know.
Black-brown relations. What are the sources of tension?
The sources of the tension is I think that society will show that the Anglo community that's been in the majority has always, you know, as far as us, you know, thrown bones out here specifically, you know, and here we have seen where Hispanics and Blacks try to work together, but the tensions are there. It's under the carpet. It's there. I mean, we saw it in Mayor Lanier's election. We thought that we could, you know, support Sylvester Turner. Hell, the Hispanic community voted 80% for Lanier. I mean, you know, he got his ass kicked. That was that underlying tension that was still, and it was hard for us to get to 50% for Lee Brown. It's a tension that we have here. It's a bad tension that they have in Dallas. It's just, I think that we need to, sometime in the near future, you know, whether in my lifetime or the next generation to come, that Blacks and African Americans need to get together, and once that coalition is complete, then they can do anything they want, elect anybody they want, and set the agenda. You know, until that's not done, then we'll always be on the outside looking in.
U.S.-Mexico relations. What is the role of Chicanos in that?
I think Chicanos play a big role in that. Obviously, a lot of us have relatives on the other side. We want to see better relations on both sides. We want to see better as far as the business community. We want to see more trade between Mexico and the United States. We want to, that fence that the Republicans want to put up, we want to make sure it's kept down. I mean, but this is not without reservation. There's a lot of traditional Mexican Americans here that want to make sure that everybody has the right papers, and you know, because of the healthcare stuff, you know, I hear it in my community too. Well, that lady just came from Mexico and she's got her Lone Star card, and I'm over here. I was born here, and I haven't even got my card. I think that's a little underlying that we have between Mexican Americans, your traditional Mexican Americans, and your Mexicans on the other side that come over here and try to get that. We want immigrants to come in, but legally, you know, not illegally. And I think, but outside of that, because our roots are from Mexico, that we do want to continue trading. And it's only, it's going to be us, the Chicanos, to roll out the carpet for them. But it's with restrictions. It's with restrictions.
Can you give me a little quick history and an opinion on the demise of the El Castillo political machine? What happened?
I think what happened, and I learned from that, is that you cannot pick and choose who runs in these offices. If a young man comes in that seat that's over there and tells me, Mario, I want to run for the office, I've been there before, you know. And I was told not to run. And I was told not to. I think that's what happened. The guys up in top were picking and choosing, you know, who runs. When you had good, young, qualified Hispanics, others, other than who's in the leadership or who bows to who or whoever, you know. And I was part of it. I mean, I'm not innocent, you know. I was part of that. But I learned through the system, and we all learned through the system, that, hey, this is the way it goes, you know. You cannot be revengeful. You cannot tell somebody that he or she cannot run for office. It's not your time. That's what I was told, that it was not my time. And look at where I am. When a young man or woman, Hispanic, comes in at one of these chairs and asks me, Mario, I want to run, what do you think? I'm going to tell him, look, if you feel qualified, your family's behind you, you want to run, you run. I will not stand in anybody's way. I mean, I learned my lesson. And I think that is part of what happened to Castillo, Ben Reyes, and those that followed. I mean, you know, they tried to pick, and you cannot do that anymore. Hispanics are more intelligent than that, you know.
I know we're running out of time, so let me get to one good area. Tell me who your wife is. How did you meet her? Your children, who are they? And are they following in your directions?
I met my wife at Milby High School, where I'm an alumnus over there. I met her there. She's from, well, she also was from the Barrio Magnolia. She was born in Mission, though, but she came over here at a young age. I have three kids. I have one 25. She's attending the university. She's a junior, just like I am, at the University of Houston. I have a 21-year-old daughter that's a sophomore at the University of Houston. They both work and they go to school at night, and kind of like I do, I go day and night.
You're going to college now?
Yes.
Okay.
And I'm to finish my undergraduate degree. And in fact, I went to my American Literature this morning. And then I have my son, he's 15, he's going to Rice K School here. So I have three lovely kids, my wife, and...
what's her name?
Teresa, I'm sorry. I got Teresa, is my wife. They call her Tere. Then I got Ollie, A-L-I. Ollie is my 25. Melissa is my 21. And Mario Elias is my 15-year-old. He's the third. He's the third, Mario Elias. Elias is my grandfather on my mother's side that I think really brought all this together. He settled here in 1905. He came in from Concepcion, Texas. He settled there in the Barrio Magnolia. He was the head janitor at Rice Institute back in 1916. And then when it turned to Rice University, for 40 years, the head janitor at Rice. When he first came here with his uncle and all, him and his uncle used to ride up the Buffalo Bayou on a skiff to get provisions, because there wasn't any roads. And they'd go up Buffalo Bayou to Magnolia. And then they used to live in a place called El Pozo here, there around Allen's Landing. And then they moved over to Magnolia. And my grandfather started one of the organizations, Los Montuelistas de Benito Juarez. And what they would do is they would receive immigrants from Mexico and the valley and come in and try to, back here we had a compost plant instead of the port. Now that's the port. It was a compost plant back then. He would receive them, and my grandfather, after hours, and Rice University didn't know this, after hours, he became Don Elias Ramirez. And he was one of the big social men in the community, Woodman of the World, LULAC. He's on the first charter. His name is on there. We have the documents. He also, at his home, he had 12 kids. He had the main house, and he had 14 little small units behind his house. That's where he would put his kids after they got married. When they got on their feet, then he went on. And then the rest of the immigrants that were coming in, if they didn't have a place, he'd put them there. In 1936, FDR came into Houston to cut the ribbon at the San Jacinto Monument. Well, at that time, the port had already been open a few years. Oscar Holcomb was the mayor. Yes? Oscar Holcomb asked FDR if he'd come and cut the ribbon at the port. He said, why not? Well, Holcomb asked my grandfather to be on the reception committee, the welcoming committee, for Franklin Delano Roosevelt there in 1936. They bricked Navigation Boulevard, and it was still bricked till about 1960, that same brick was still there till about 65, from downtown all the way to the port. My grandfather was the first Hispanic ever on a welcoming committee for the President of the United States there at there. And then he did many other things that the Tejano Historical Society is gathering now. They're doing a research on my grandfather, and I would he had his own library. This man was a man of vision, education, helping people, and all the way back to 1905. I think and then he died in 1960. But I think his vision and the blood that I have from him, I think set off Mom, and it just spilled over to my father, and then to me. And I think he deserves all the credit. And go ahead.
Two last questions. The last question is going to be any statement you want to make, because we're running out of time, and we want to put something in because we haven't got time to get to it. But the other question is about splits. I'll give you some big ones. The Mexican American Democrats split into two
And now we have Mad and Tejano. What is the efficacy at all of Mexican-American Democrats, the voters, the people? You had a rift with the Center for Mexican-American Studies director, Tacho Mendiola. What is the status of that? Last rift is, obviously it was difficult to work with Yana Davila when you were a winner. How did that work out?
Well, you know, I tried, let me tell you, when I got elected, well, let's go one by one, Mad. I didn't condone any splits. I don't. It's not healthy. I mean, with the outside looking in, here you got the Hispanics and the Hispanics fighting amongst each other. I didn't like it. I didn't know the basis behind it. All I knew was this guy against this guy and this guy against it. You know, I was seeing friends fight each other. I don't like it. You know, I don't condone it, and I don't practice it. I wish everybody could. You know, I know we have our problems. We have our differences, and you know, we have differences, issues. You know, Houston from Dallas. From the valley and all that, we're going to have those differences. But why show our ass, you know, to the people out there? I think if we're united, I mean, we can do a lot more for our folks than having to fight it out, whether you're Tejano Democrats or Mexican. I don't like it, and I don't condone it. And I think it's all it does is set us back. I mean, we got enough fights of our own, affirmative action. We got people throwing, firing torpedoes at our engine room, and we're here fighting in our own backyard. So I don't like it. Anyway.
But within that big structure of the Democratic Party, are Mexican-American Democrats, people who vote that way and are active, are they taken into account at all?
No, they haven't been. You know, I've had to bang on the table for appointments here, you know, even at the White House. It's always been a perception that if a Hispanic gets picked here, it automatically means Houston. Or Dallas, or you know, but it's always been from the valley, because that's where they've always been, you know. But I think that the Mexican Americans have been taken for granted, you know. I mean, you know, hey, we beg for appropriations, you know. Every time we go up there, this administration hasn't, you know, we gave him almost 75% of the vote. We haven't gotten what we deserve, you know.
Let me digress, because it just occurred to me, and this was a very deft move, and if I'm wrong, correct me. I attended your inauguration or swearing in, and you had, remarkably, the presence of Governor Bush, governor-elect. At the same time, I don't know whether this was just a hoax or a joke or what, but I heard you or someone introducing you saying that President Clinton was on the line, and you said, hold him, I've got a governor right here. Was all that
oh,
true?
No. It was Sheila Jackson Lee was on the line, not the president. The congresswoman was on the line. She wanted to talk to me. She was on the line. Let me tell you what happened. Bush had called all the 31 senators in and said, hey, look, on Inauguration Day, I'm going to be going around, you know, and he says, are you going to have a party? He was going to the ones that got elected, the new ones, because he knew those were going to have parties for their constituents and their family. And he took me in, he brought me in, and sat me down, and his Secretary of State was beside him, Tony Garza. By the way, a little footnote, Tony Garza used to, when my parents lived in Brownsville, there was always this little snotty-nosed kid that would come in with my brother, also snotty-nosed, and my mother would always cook him, you know, beans and eggs and tortillas and all that. It was Tony Garza. He was my mother's next-door neighbor in Brownsville. Anyway, he brought all 31 in. He said, Mario, you know, he kind of gave his agenda, what he wanted and all that. And I said, well, you know, I'm open-minded. We'll sit down and talk. He said, by the way, I'm going to be going around to the new senators and said, can I come by your party? And, I wasn't going to tell him. He's going to be the governor of the state of Texas. I wasn't going to say no. I said, sure, I'm not. If you want to come by. I thought he was just patronizing me and making me feel good, you know. Well, he showed up. I wasn't going to turn him down. You know, he's the governor of the state of Texas. And that, you know, I don't believe in some of his philosophy, but he's our governor, and I'll respect, I respected Ronald Reagan as our president, didn't believe in his philosophy. I respected George Bush as our president, did not believe in his philosophy. And I respect Governor George Bush, but do not believe in his philosophy. And that day was a day for me and my friends, and I wasn't going to show my ass by saying, no, you can't come in, you know? And my folks loved it, you know?
Everybody
loved it.
Everybody won.
No, everybody won.
Dr. Mendiola, Representative Davila.
Tacho and I had a rift on, because he had predicted that it was Roman in first place. He'd put out a, in the Viva magazine, he had put out a poll that he had taken, and then I was in third place. And you know, polls like that hurt you money wise. You know, the problem is he didn't factor in Galena Park. He only factored in key precincts in Houston. He never factored in Galena Park. If he would have factored it in, I would have been in second place. You know, but he had me a long shot third.
Is that over?
That's over. Nacho and I.
You've been carrying the ball to get money for the Senate?
If he asks me for money, I will go. I'll go to bat for Mexican American Studies.
Well, for the record, you did attend and were prominent at the 25th anniversary of the center, so I was glad to see that.
No.
Representative Davila.
Let me tell you about Diana. Right after I got elected, I asked every state rep, you know, that was in Senate 6. You know, I had a sponsor that said, let's sit down before and go unified. And it was her included. I even offered to hold the meetings around her schedule, and she would not go. I even asked some of the lobbyists that helped Roman. Michael Solad, I mean, he helped me, but he called her. She said no. Charlie Miller, a big, big businessman here, millionaire, supported Roman over me. He called Diana. She said no. And Amo Pena, another one that supported Roman, and he called Diana. Said, you need to go unified. I offered the olive branch. You know, I just told you I'm not a revengeful man, and I offered the olive branch to her. And to this day, you know, had offered it to her. You know, but I mean, and she still said no. You know, still said no. And that, you know, Diana and I had our differences. You know, and it's a shame. Because you know what? She could have been anybody she wanted to be. That woman was one of our future leaders. And now she decided, she went to Harvard. I saw her debate I loved to watch her debate. She would tear people, all them gringos. Excellent debater. I wish I could debate like her. I can't do it. She was excellent. She dissected you one piece at a time on that House floor. She was excellent. And outside of that, regardless of our differences, she was, one of the best state representatives that I have seen on that House floor.
Related to that, we seem to uniquely, at the moment, being losing a lot of important leadership. Henry B. Gonzalez steps out. Diana Davila, not because of age, steps out. Hugo Berlanga takes himself out. Senator Luna, Senator Zaffarini, Senator Truan are not in very good health. We have a crisis. In that leadership, how do you see that impacting us, and what are you doing, if anything, about that, without meddling into those internal districts' affairs?
Well, the only thing that we can do is you help the leadership out and hope that they pick you. You know, if we lose those seats, that you know we're in a position to be placed on Senate Finance, you know, or on State Affairs. Or on LBB, or on these important committees that we can help our communities. You know, that's how Judy and Senator Luna, Senator Duran, both Judy and Carlos are on Senate Finance, which you know, I mean, have a hold of almost $100 billion. You know, and I think at this point, I mean, you have to see who the next leadership's going to be, and hope that you support them, just like I did Lee Brown here, and you support them and hope. Hope that they put you in positions of power to help your folks back home, because we're a small number. You can see them up there in that picture.
But in terms of the caucus or face-to-face meetings, I mean, you don't discuss these things with them or inquire or.
Yes, we do. We discuss it. It's hard to get into one's personal, you know, business. That you know courtesy, unwritten. You know, we have a courtesy there that we don't get involved in anybody else's district, any race or anything like that. When Luna retires or Duran, Judy, you know, those are their fights there. Why do I want me to get in there? Unless it's a good friend, maybe Henry Cuellar runs. You know, Henry Cuellar runs, another colleague that I have a connection to. You know, then I can see me going in there and helping them out. You know, but outside of that, if Luna goes. And one of my colleagues does not decide to run, and it's an open seat, I ain't in there, you know, unless it's somebody that has a connection to me. But sure, you know, I mean, we're only a handful. But I can tell you this, that I think you have seen Hispanics rise in the state of Texas and at the legislature. And I think you're going to see, and our younger generation is coming in, and they're more intelligent. And I'm telling you, as we progress, as the years go by, you are going to see leaders like Henry Cisneros, like Henry B., like those people that you're going to, we're going to find. There's one, let me tell you, there's one in San Antonio right now. His name is Ed Garza. He was my legislative assistant. And he was the youngest city councilman in San Antonio. And I watch him. Watch him. I look for him to be the next mayor of San Antonio. He's got a master's from A&M. I mean, sharp, and people like him. Luna likes him. Mara likes him. Bednall, who was a senator from over there, he told me, Mario, Ed Garza will be the next mayor of San Antonio. You have young Hispanic leadership coming up the pike, both male and female, and they're the ones that are going to run this country and run this state in a few years. And what their names will be, their names will be Gonzalez and Garcia, Gutierrez, Gallegos, and they will be more of those on that floor, and on the other side también.
We didn't cover everything, but your chance to say whatever you want to add to here that's important or disappointing goals or whatever.
I mean, would I change anything? You know, I wouldn't change anything. I didn't think that each step I go, I've been another step further than I never would have been. You know?
No, I meant in the area of politics and the interview, is there something that we've missed that things important to include at this point?
I think everything's been included. My grandfather, who I think has bonded me and mother in the politics to where I've been at this place. Family, let me tell you. I think of what you see in the decisions that a politician makes, especially a Hispanic politician. Family is the most important, I think, and that's the reason you see a lot of people going on. Deanna, some other folks, it's family and just the struggles that we have to go through, whether it be monetarily, you want to provide for your kids, you want to give them what somebody else is giving, and obviously this business ain't going to do it. $600 a month in the legislature, it's not going to happen. But I think if somebody has a division or wants to run for an office in the future, be sure that don't be selfish, because you got a family, and they go with the job, and I think that you will get that same answer from everybody, and they're the ones that suffer the most out of elected officials is your family. I'd like to be with my boy on a regular basis. I can't be with him, when I'm in this job.
How can you afford this?
I have my pension from the fire department. It's a nice little pension. I don't live the life of Riley, but I get by. I pay the bills. I'm able to represent my district. I said, but if there's anything that I regret, is at the time that I haven't been able to spend with my kids. But now, I go hunting and I take my boy every time. He loves it, and so we bond more. I wish I could have bonded more with my daughters, and I still do. I mean, we meet now on a regular basis. I mean, we go, I take them to dinner, and we still, bond. But it was those years that were taken. I've been in this thing now 8 years. And those were 8 years that I kept from them. But I think they enjoy it now more. It's more, family. But I think that in the Hispanic community especially, where we're more family-oriented and church-oriented, that you will see that's a big, big issue. If you decide to run for office.
What's your wife's maiden name?
Moreno.
She was in high school with you. Tell me that story about running for student body president as the last little tidbit here.
I was on the varsity basketball team, and I was in the Hispanic, we had the Latin American club, the Milby Latin American club, and we still have it. We have the alumni. And then, who's running for most popular, So, I got a gringo running in there. And one guy on the team says, look, Mario, put your name in. We only had 15% like there at Milby. And I said, look, put your name in. Well, I put it in, and oddly enough, it was a close vote. The other guy got more votes, but it was a close vote. I got second, and the girl that ran with me was one of my girlfriends back then, And she won second place. But that was my first introduction to politics, most popular. And I was runner up.
It wasn't student body president?
No, it wasn't student body president. It was who was most popular.
I see.
Who's the most popular student at Milby?
Were you involved with Mayo or the student protests here or Raza Unida Party or anything?
I was involved with that group. See, if you remember early, I said I didn't like politics. Yeah. I tried to stay away from it, but I just couldn't. I got engulfed, you know. And then now I know that politics is everywhere. I mean, it doesn't matter. And somebody told me, if you got to go to the store, if you go to the Fiesta or the Randalls or the Garlands, and you got to pick and choose between the toilet paper that you buy, that's political. And I mean, it's been political. Everything that you do, unfortunately, has politics in it. And, you know, and that's why I guess I was engulfed by this political scene. And I just said, hey, if you're going to do it, you better do it. You can't wait outside, you know. And that's what I was doing. The outsider looking in. If you're going to get in the arena, you better get in it with both feet. And that's how I got involved in politics.
Senator, thank you for your time. I know that you're very busy. We look forward to future activities on your part.
Thank you.